Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston. Just before I started this week's show, I ran across this latest article from Jared Yates Sexton, a good friend of the podcast, by the way, and in his article titled, "The Mad King, Trump, the Tech Bros, and the Murder of Liberal Democracy," Jared writes the following, and I quote, "We have a puppet president, a figurehead who commands the adoration and slavish devotion of tens of millions of people on behalf of the wealth and the oligarchical classes that fund, enrich, and direct him." Well, guess what, everybody? That's the basic ball game right there, right? The tech bro oligarchy is taking over, and all they needed was the right puppet or figurehead. I'll provide a link to Jared's latest post there from his Substack called "Dispatches from a Collapsing State." Of course, though, the Democratic Party is partially to blame for all this as they joined MAGA Republicans in elevating these tech bros as some kinds of brilliant wizards who need not be questioned. Just give them what they want and they'd make everything better, including helping out the Democratic Party. And in our great state of Michigan, Democrats and Republicans joined hand in hand last month, led by the Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer in signing major tax exemptions for expensive and environmentally damaging data centers for these tech bros like Google and Microsoft. Now, Michigan Democrats did pass a bill last year, and Whitmer did sign it into law in which Michigan was supposed to become a clean energy state by 2040, although it still listed natural gas as a clean energy source. But hey, look, it wasn't perfect, but damn it, it was at least a beginning to make our state's air cleaner and to diversify the state's economic portfolio. But with the signing of these major tax exemptions for these data centers, that's gonna increase the demand for energy in the state's energy grid. And here's an exciting little caveat put into that clean energy bill. Are you ready? There's a sweet provision in there stating that we keep fossil fuel plants running if demand exceeds energy capacity. Oh, that is terrific. Tell them what they've won, Johnny. That's right. They've won unlimited contributions from the very people who are busy turning our little 248-year experiment of democracy into an autocracy. Hey, isn't that wonderful, people? At least they get campaign contributions. And what do we get, Michiganders? An increase in energy bills for the people. Oh, and these data centers need to be cooled, so they'll suck up around 5 million gallons of water per day to keep their servers cool. Isn't that just wonderful, everyone? I mean, I'm just so glad that Google is getting a major tax exemption and other goodies from us, considering that Google just agreed to Dear Leader Trump's demands to rename the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America on Google Maps. But hey, if that's what it takes to appease Dear Leader to ensure they receive massive tax breaks and carte blanche to do whatever they want since President Musk and Dear Leader are busy gutting the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which served as a cop on the beat watching the Wall Street banksters and the Silicon Valley tech bros, then so be it. Because campaign contributions mean more than we the people. I mean, what's a little mixed messaging from our Democratic leadership, including our governor, going to really harm anyone, right? I mean, democracy is only holding on by a thread as President Musk is being allowed to defang the very agency that brought in $20 billion to Americans who suffered from the crooked practices by Wall Street and other corporations. I mean, this sounds like just a wonderful idea for the state of Michigan to give these guys millions upon millions of dollars in corporate welfare. Congratulations, everyone. Democrats, please, 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 I'm begging you, stop acting MAGA light. You won't get rewarded for it. For example, I'd like to play this little video for you, okay? And It speaks volumes to me. I'd like to know your opinion, but first, just listen to this clip, okay? And then I'll tell you what you just listened to. Here you go.
Hi, everybody. It's Kevin Hertel here. We are at Shores End, which has been an institution in St. Clair Shores for decades, serving the community. And we just met with a group of servers and owners here at Shores End. And they told us what we've heard from so many small businesses across our community, that it is critically important that we retain the tip credit in the state of Michigan and allow these businesses to operate the way they have successfully for so many years. They make our community great, and we're going to do everything we can to fix this issue so that servers, bartenders, restaurant owners, small business owners across our community can continue to thrive.
That was Michigan Democratic State Senator Kevin Hertel on X, making the MAGA Republican argument as to why he wants the Democratic majority in the state Senate to follow in the MAGA Republican House majority's footsteps in weakening the upcoming minimum wage raises and paid sick leave time scheduled to begin in about 10 days. Now, I'm not trying to sound like a broken record here, but some Democrats, not all Democrats, mind you, there have been some good progressives refusing to budge on this, which is awesome, but some Democrats in Lansing are trying to copy what former Republican Governor Rick Snyder and the MAGA Republican majority in the legislature did back in 2018 when they illegally watered down minimum wage and paid sick leave initiatives. The state Supreme Court, the Supreme Court that progressives fought hard to make it more working class friendly, ruled last year that MAGA Republicans and Rick Snyder acted unconstitutionally when they weakened or slowed these initiatives down after they blocked voters from having the chance to vote on them. You see, these initiatives are popular, and the people would have easily voted them into law. That's why MAGA Republicans stopped us from voting on them and then purposely watered them down for the next decade, hurting the working class. But thanks to the state Supreme Court ruling, servers at restaurants and bars, for example, can now earn a living wage, a more stable wage, and they can still receive tips. Ain't nothing stopping people from tipping them. And the evidence is out there, by the way, showing that tips have slowed ever since the pandemic. So that would really help them out there. And then we don't want people coming into work sick, and we want people to have the chance to help a sick loved one, which is why we wanted increases in paid sick leave. I mean, this seems like a no-brainer to me. And you think after losing the election in which working class voters flocked to the billionaire tech bros who leave them out to dry in a heartbeat, this would serve as a great chance for Michigan Democrats to prove that they are for the working class and not the corporate restaurant lobby. But then you get guys like Senator Hertel who are imitating MAGA Republicans by trying to hurt the workers. What the hell are you guys doing there? Now, give it up to West Michigan progressive activist Joe Spalding, good friend of this podcast, by the way, who responded to Senator Hertel by saying, if you really want to protect the restaurants, you'd stand up to Dear Leader Trump's attempts to deport between a quarter and half of our food labor force from farm to table. Yeah, you think. I mean, that would make sense. But Joe, stop trying to make sense, please. They can't take that in Lansing. The bottom line is, despite what the Lansing political intelligentsia is reporting, there is no deadline for the minimum wage raises and paid sick leave increases. There is no deadline. The court made its ruling. These initiatives should have already been in the works back in 2018. Businesses and restaurants knew this was a possibility. And I say good business owners out there know how to adapt, or so I've been told. Now, the Lansing political intelligentsia is losing its collective mind because Governor Whitmer's leaving for a trade mission while the state legislature is running out of time passing out a bill to screw the workers. Again, there is no deadline. The only deadline out there is how to best screw the workers. Look, I was fine with Governor Whitmer leaving. I really was. But then David Eggert from Crane's Detroit Business posted on X that Whitmer told legislative leaders that if a deal cannot be reached on amending wage and leave laws this week, they should consider delaying the laws until July 1st to buy more time for negotiations. My God. Stop this, Democrats. Stop this now. Paying people sub-minimum wages isn't how you're going to make people believe that you are fighting for them. It is so maddening so maddening that some Democrats out there are joining MAGA Republicans in doing this. Stand up for the workers. Stand up for your neighbors. Stand up for our state's economy. Stop trying to protect corporate business interests and stop adopting MAGA talking points. When you sound MAGA light, you lose. Haven't we learned that already? I mean, we're already seeing how MAGA Republicans don't care about the working class in the U.S. Congress. They've just introduced another hefty tax cut for their well-to-do billionaires while slashing Medicare, Medicaid, and while not finding ways to lower prescription drug costs, by the way. And they're also looking to slash agricultural funding, so you farmers out there, get ready for more pain. And why are they doing this? All so that they can offer some $4.5 trillion in tax cuts for Musk, Bezos, Zuckerberg, Miriam Allison, and more of the oligarchy class. Oh, and get ready for more corporate tax cuts, which is exactly what the doctor ordered after they used greedflation to inflate their prices, hurting all of us for these past couple of years. Oh, and like I said, Musk and MAGA Republicans are loving the moves that they're making to gut the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which again removes the cops overlooking the billionaire tech bros and banksters working to screw all of us over. And meanwhile, Musk and Trump are trying to gut the National Institutes of Health funding, $200 million of which goes to universities right here in Michigan. And these schools are apparently doing a lot of woke things here in Michigan, like, you know, studying cures for cancer, Alzheimer's disease, or Parkinson's disease, or kids with genetic mutations. Now, this doesn't really come as a surprise to me, since Trump and some MAGA Republicans view people with disabilities as a waste of space. Although, to be honest, I never thought that Musk and Trump would want to be known as the pro-cancer tandem, but crazier things have happened here lately. Thankfully, we've got a solid Attorney General in Michigan in Dana Nessel, and she's joined other states in filing a lawsuit to halt these disastrous cuts. But can we really rely on the Supreme Court to do the right thing? These oligarchs are not on your side, and it's time that we realize that they and MAGA Republicans are never going to fight for us. Coming up, one person who's been fighting for the working class and the millions of marginalized people in the state will join me to talk about how we can best push back against this new autocracy trying to take over the country, including Michigan. And she's also starting a new project so that we can protest in a number of ways during the next few years, and that is something we desperately, desperately need. Progressive activist and peace activist and organizer Julia Pulver is coming up next on Michigan's premier progressive podcast. You're listening to LOL.
A podcast that believes in using common sense to move Michigan into the future. And by common sense, we mean progressive sense. We've all seen what 40 years of Republican leadership did to this state, and we refuse to go back. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. You can follow Pat on Facebook or X. Pat still calls it Twitter. Or on the Gram, Threads, and also on YouTube. Subscribe to the show on YouTube and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. All right, I think we gave Pat enough time to catch his breath. Let's get back to it. Here's Pat Johnston.
Special thanks again to my good and dear friend Jessica for lending her outstanding voice here on The Left of Lansing. And thanks, Jess, for just being one of the kindest and dearest people I've ever known. The show would not be what it is if not for the hard work that you've given to help make it all sound better. I am forever in your debt. All right. I am excited to talk with this week's guest because she was one of the first guests I ever had when I started this little venture about 6 or 7 years ago. Julia Pulver is a registered nurse, progressive political activist, former Democratic State House candidate, and peace activist and organizer. Despite falling just short in her campaigns, which included a close election to oust the disgraceful Jim Runstead back in 2018, Julia's never given into despair and silence. She's always lending her voice and energy to stand up for the many who cannot stand up for themselves, whether it's on abortion, whether it's LGBTQ plus rights, healthcare, the so-called auto insurance quote-unquote reform bill, or the spread of autocracy across the United States. Julia Pulver doesn't shy away from doing or saying what she believes. And what she believes is nothing but good old-fashioned common sense, I say, and we progressives are lucky to have a person of Julia's stature, energy, and wisdom right here in the state of Michigan. Julia Pulver, thanks so much for coming back on the show. I appreciate it.
No, thank you, Pat. You're making me blush.
Now, how have you been holding up, I guess, this past month? Wait, it hasn't even been a month. Hasn't even been a month since Elon Musk became president. And of course, Trump is there too. That's sad. But anyway, how have you been holding up?
I've been holding up okay. You know, I think we've been in various stages of recoil, but then also kind of going back on the attack too. You know, we've all been in this sort of wait and see what's going to happen. And it's becoming clearer and clearer that they have decided, probably under the wise leadership of President Musk, to follow the Silicon Valley ethos of move fast and break things, which may work when you have your own little fiefdom in Silicon Valley, but it does not work when you try to apply that to the entire country, and especially in DC. It was not designed to work that way. And we're seeing at least some of the judicial guardrails trying to hold. And I think enough people now are starting to realize that they have been very much subjected to a huge bait and switch. So I have a little bit of faith that people are paying attention. This is not the same country we were in back in 2017 when people were just shocked and still just had no idea what was going on. We've been through this, you know, where we're a little more well-seasoned now. And I'm feeling that people are not going to let this one just kind of go by without a fight. So I'm feeling enheartened in some ways.
Do you believe that's why we weren't seeing the immediate outrage and all of the marches right after the election? Because like you said, we were already through this. I guess we already had that initial shock in 2017. At the same time, though, were you concerned that people were like, well, I guess this is what America wants, so let it happen, and people weren't going to fight?
I think there's still certain elements of that. I mean, there is a very much a heartbroken chorus of told you so's going on. There's a lot of buyer's remorse. There's what I've been calling, we're living in right now, is the fat leopard era, that people are realizing that, yes, the face-eating leopards party, they're coming for your faces too, even though we warned you over and over again. So honestly, I think the response this time around was one less of shock, because it's not shocking. You know, it's disappointing, but it's not shocking. We've seen this happen. And I think groups are being more deliberate in their planning, because we know that they are going to have really violent, heavy-handed responses to anything that we do, especially once, you know, they've been working through their confirmation processes. And, you know, again, we're only 3 weeks in. We haven't even really seen the kinds of hell that they're about to unleash, you know, as far as everything having to do with the military and the National Guard and response to protests and things. So I think people knew we have to be a little bit more strategic this time around. We have to be careful. We have to realize that not only are we dealing with the official law enforcement, we now have 1,500 or so fully emboldened paramilitary red shirts, we'll call them, instead of, you know, brown shirts or black shirts, that are now going to be showing up to anything we do as well. So I think people who are in the activist communities and people who are in leadership are being a little bit more thoughtful and deliberate in how we plan things, how we are going to push back. But there is still a lot of internal debate and fighting over, do we try to use the normal levers of power, the roadblocks we have? The Senate really is the only thing we have at a national level to even just try to slow things down. And do we try to introduce counter bills? Do we do things as normal, or do we throw out the old playbook and say, none of this is normal? We can't use the same old tactics. There is that sort of push-pull happening right now. And I think there's a lot of evidence that the groundswell is very much pushing for a new direction. And I think it's maybe one of the reasons we saw Senator Peters announce he was not going to run again. He is a very sort of by the book, which has served him well up until this moment, honestly. And I think, though, that he's able to see the writing on the wall, that this style of leadership that he has championed and done well at in the past is not the kind of leadership that's going to get us out of this moment. And I think he kind of acknowledges that. And I think there's going to be a lot of that sort of reckoning happening, because the base has no interest in bipartisanship right now. The base has no interest in being a part of making any of this work. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where those battles are won and lost. But from a groundswell perspective, the base wants warriors. They want fighters. They want people who are going to draw a line in the sand and say, no, we are not going to play this game.
Are you okay with the, and I don't want to call it infighting with our side, with progressives, liberals, whatever, you know, whatever it is, but you're seeing it on social media, you're seeing it happen with influential voices. I actually think it is healthy, especially after a defeat like this one, to to have some real good debates on strategy, on policy, etc., on our side, even if we don't agree. And I think that's what makes our side better in a way, is that we aren't just marching in lockstep always with with a dear leader, you know, with a Trump or whatever like that. I think, Ashley, this is pretty healthy. I don't know. What's your opinion?
It's absolutely healthy. We have to always be improving, right? We can't rest on, you know, any laurels we have are immediately dead the second we go to run on them. You know, too much is happening too fast. And it's healthy. Any movement, any group of people with shared ideals has to have honest, frank discussions on how we actualize those ideals. It's worthless to have the best ideas in the world if no one is listening to us because we haven't figured out how to talk to people. And if we can't win elections to actually get those things done. So we absolutely have to adapt with how people are taking in their information, what messages they're willing to listen to and not listen to. And if we're falling short, which obviously we are, we have to change or we will be doomed to repeat the same kind of losses over and over again.
So I found this clip from an interview that we did way back in June of 2019. And there you talked about why you were able to nearly win your state house race in a pretty red district there in Oakland County. So here, listen to this.
It becomes our job to educate them on the reason we would want to do this or not do this is because this is how your life would be made better or worse. And then actually mean that. People tend to try to paint a really either big fantasy picture or sweep under the rug the way that it's actually going to hurt them. But I think the more that you're real with people and you can talk to them and meet them where they are. Most people, they want to go to work. They want to not get fired. They want to go and see their kids. That's their life that they're living. And every once in a while, we come and knock on their door enough and tell them to go vote. It's on us to bring those things home and make them real and say, the reason you're so tired that you have to work these two full-time jobs because our minimum wage in our state is so low. If you're able to support the people who are going to pass the laws to make the minimum wage an actual living wage, this is going to make it so you're not so tired all the time.
So in many ways, you were sounding like, you know, some real strong dirt road progressive Democrats that we have in Lansing, such as Representative Betsy Cafia in Traverse City, who's really been pushing the party to run everywhere, but also not to run scared, because as you said there, progressive ideas work and are popular once you can really reach and talk to the people and letting them know that Democrats are there to fight for them. I'm guessing you still hold those ideals, but do you think those ideas haven't really been coveted by the entire party? Let's just start with the state of Michigan.
I mean, I definitely agree. I still agree. I mean, it's just from a philosophical standpoint, right? If we believe our ideas are right, if we believe that not only are they good and benevolent and egalitarian, you know, of all those good adjectives, we have to stand by them. We can't capitulate and say, well, maybe it's okay for us to throw this one group of people under the bus so long as we win elections because we're really good on everything else. So I don't want anyone being willing to sell out really any group of people that we purport to actually champion. I think the biggest lesson that we can learn is in times like these, when our opponents who are pushing not only bad policy, stupid policy, harmful policy, that we have to really, I don't want to say stick to our guns because I'm a pacifist, but we are going to be called whatever they're going to call us, regardless of what it is that we're doing. So we might as well stick to our beliefs, right? So they're pushing bad policy, but they're pushing unpopular policy, and they also operate in bad faith. Nothing, no criticisms or critiques that they have of us as a movement is based on anything other than just pure smear. It's just pure attack. It doesn't even make sense half of the time. So why would you want to bow and cower to a group of people who are wrong and will never actually give you the benefit of the doubt? They will never agree that your idea is good. They will never say, oh, you got me there. That's a good point. You're right. You'll never hear those words come out of their mouths. So why would we, you know, we keep assuming that they are like us, which I don't understand. You know, when a serious person or group brings a serious criticism of something that we're doing, we take it seriously. And that's how we have evolved as a movement. That's how we've become more intersectional. That's how we have become the bigger tent, because we've been able to do that self-reflection and and improve when presented with better ideas or presented with something that holds us to the ideas we purport to believe in, right? We're willing to act in good faith. So I think because that is our mindset, we keep assuming, and I don't know why, it's like Lucy with the football, like we keep assuming that if we are just more reasonable than them, they'll finally come around. If we're just more fair, more practical, if we are, you know, make the least waves, if we have somehow, we think that there is some magic recipe of decorum and civility that we can have that's going to make the Republicans or MAGAs or whoever is coming after us, that it's somehow going to satiate their needs. And it never is, right? So it's defeatist going into it to think, well, I'm going to capitulate on this, or I'm going to soften my tone on this, or I'm not even going to bring this up because I could maybe get further in with my colleagues or the people across the aisle, or possibly those swing voters that might think this way and but might agree with me on everything else. We keep just setting ourselves up for failure and letting down the people who have joined our coalitions, the groups that have banded with us. And so it really is one of the most self-defeating things you can do is sell out your principles or, you know, bow to pressure because maybe the one thing you're really, really concerned about, you think they'll meet you halfway on only if you sell out X, Y, and Z other groups. Like, is that really who we want to be? I don't want to be part of that. If I say I believe in bodily autonomy, I believe in bodily autonomy. And that is not a bargaining chip that I'm going to be willing to throw on the table to get myself something else. Mostly because one, it's wrong. And two, you're not going to get it. You're never going to give it to you. I think we need to just drop all the pretense that there is some sort of fair-minded debates going on between parties or between movements and realize like, no, I can't even defend this, but maybe at some point in the past, there was a contest of ideas that we were willing to exchange with each other on, but those days are long gone. Right now, we are in a propaganda war. We are in a war for just basic truth and facts. All of that is way more important than trying to make nice with the people who've made it abundantly clear their only goal is to take you down.
That was perfectly all said there. You were talking about sometimes there are some who think, oh, if we just capitulate, maybe then they'll stop attacking this or that. And I feel that way when it comes to the transgender community, because I've said on here many times I thought Democrats haven't really done the greatest of jobs standing up for the transgender community. And here's the thing, by not standing up for them, we then, in my opinion, capitulate there. Then we embolden MAGA Republicans to go after other parts of the LGBTQ plus community. I don't know if you agree with that, but go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is all part of any sort of, and this is another warning I have for other people too. It really doesn't matter. They don't actually have any real beliefs. This is a strategy of creating in-groups and out-groups. And this is the hallmark of any sort of, you know, authoritarian or fascistic movement is you get people on your side by going after the most marginalized groups and turning them into villains, right? And so this is what we're seeing right now with the trans community, especially trans children and their parents. We have somehow just become so numb to all of this that we've missed the fact that adults in this country have chosen as their punching bags children who are different and who for some reason are the easiest marks because all they want is to just be left alone and treated with basic dignity and respect. And because of that, oh, no, 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 no. These children and their parents must be evil and wrong. And we're simultaneously worried about child abuse while also very publicly abusing them in the public square. But it's not actually about that. They don't actually care about trans children. They don't actually care about their well-being. It's very clear if they did, they would not be doing these kinds of things on turning, you know, trans student athletes, of which there are two in our entire state, by the way, two total, yep. You know, that this has no basis in reality of doing anything to help children. That's just the propaganda they make up to excuse why they're doing this. And because it's a small number of people and it affects a small number of people, well, then you're able to go after other smaller groups, right? And this is the thing is every time you go along with it or you don't stand up for it, the out-groups grow bigger and bigger and the in-groups shrink. And the in-groups, as long as they keep accumulating that power, you're going to be very quickly faced with, we all know the poem, First They Came For, you know. But what people don't realize is at the end of that poem, the next line could be, and then they came after me if I didn't agree to like go full Nazi, right? And that's what people don't understand is it's not actually about any of these out-groups or these marginalized groups of people. There's nothing wrong with these people. These are all good, fine, decent people who are not hurting anyone or just trying to live their lives. But they make for easy scapegoats. They make for easy targets because they're easily identifiable and there's a small number of them. But again, once that adds up and if you're not part of any of those smaller groups, you will eventually be part of the group of people where they tell you, you either join us or you're out too. And anybody who has any amount of power or privilege in this country right now needs to realize they come for everyone eventually. And you have to be prepared to say either, sure, I'll go along with it. And then guess what? Now you're a Nazi. Or you have to say no. And it's a lot easier to say no to them now when all the rest of the people who are being affected by this are still with us and are still in any kind of position to do anything about it. It's a lot easier to stand with them now than when it's just you and the others and they're saying you got to pick a side.
Also, I just always find the hypocrisy in all of this too, because aren't these the same people? Aren't these the same people, Julia, who are just complaining over the last couple of years that parents need more rights?
Oh, remember, what was it? We don't co-parent with the government. Where are those people? And that's, again, that is more proof that any of these groups that purport to care about the welfare of children don't actually care about children. They use them as an excuse. All the Moms for Liberty groups, the book banning, all of the Don't Say Gay, all of these things, they don't actually care about children. This has nothing to do with it. They are using children as an excuse to just go and do all of the bigoted, hateful things they wanted to do anyway. I mean, I find it really disturbing. One of the biggest sort of victory laps that anti-censorship, quote unquote, anti-DEI, you know, all of these sort of anti-cancel culture group, you know what they really want? They want to use the R word again. That has been their victory, that they are going to school board meetings and they are going places in public to describe developmentally disabled or impaired students. They can use the R word again without getting canceled. That was their victory. That's what they wanted. This was part of their whole anti-PC thing, is they want to be able to say whatever they want. That was their goal. That is the level of like weird, like depravity that they were willing to hurt all of these children over, that they're willing to stage this bizarre war against books and against pride flags and against using the preferred names and pronouns. Like that was all part of it, is they want to be able to just call kids mean names again without any repercussions. Like this is the weird level of motivation they have of don't tell me what I can and can't do, right? So it actually has nothing to do with children, has nothing to do with I'm the parent, so I should be able to make the decision for my kid about something very personal, like, oh yeah, you don't want to get your kids vaccinated. Okay, fine. Well then why do you have a problem with me choosing to allow my kid to have testosterone, right? So like you are clearly a hypocrite. Like this has nothing to do with your deeply held moral beliefs. You're just a hypocrite who is using this as an excuse to do what you want to do. And you really don't care if children, remember kids? I'm like, I feel like Reverend Lovejoy's wife, right? Like, won't somebody please think of the children? Like, do you actually remember what kids are and that you purported to care about? Well, if you did care about them, then it wouldn't be so selective that you only care about them when it means you get to now go back to being a douche and nobody can say anything.
Well said, well said. And, you know, I've been talking a lot about how the MAGA Republican Party always says that they care about children, but everything they do says otherwise. Anyway, we are nearing the end of this here, Julia. I know you want to talk about this fantastic workshop called Wage Peace, A Gentle Guide for Angry People. Can you talk about what this workshop is all about, how you came about developing it, and why it's needed now more than ever before?
Absolutely. Well, wage peace is one of the sort of three core components of President Jimmy Carter's legacy. I have been lucky enough to be doing some consulting work for the Carter Center since July of last year. And I really appreciate his lasting legacy of, first and foremost, waging peace. I have put together about a 4-hour long workshop that will be a training for anybody who is thinking that they are going to be wanting to organize or plan any kind of protest. We go over how to do it, the nuts and bolts of creating visuals, what different methods can be used, how to craft a lasting message, and how to make the biggest impact possible while remaining 100% peaceful, because we know that they're coming for us. My workshop starts out with that very chilling clip of SecDef Pete Hegseth refusing to promise or even answer Senator Hirono's question about whether or not he would authorize shooting protesters. But of course, he wouldn't answer because, of course, that's exactly what he plans to do. He can't wait to have any excuse to start firing. And not just him. Like I said, we've now got a bunch of other people who are going to be very, very interested in doing as much intimidation, infiltration of anybody doing anything counter. They've been emboldened. All of these paramilitary groups are going to be even worse now. So we're going to be getting it from multiple sides, and they are just looking for any excuse to start raining down pain, right? And so I feel it is my personal responsibility as somebody who has done this sort of peaceful action planning for decades. I'm a Unitarian Universalist. This is sponsored by the Michigan UU Social Justice Network. And I've been doing this kind of peaceful organizing since I was a teenager, which is several decades into the future from that time. I won't say how many, but lots. So I've just really put together a really effective training that goes over what is and what is not peaceful protest. What are the kinds of things you need to be aware of? And really just practice and think of strategy too. Like, part of what we need to do is get more creative, right? There are things you can do beyond marching and rallies. There's a lot of things that we can be doing, and we need to start being a little bit more unpredictable, because the same old is not going to do it. So this is a workshop that is being held on March 1st. This is the first one we're doing, March 1st at Birmingham Unitarian Church, which is in Bloomfield Hills on Woodward Avenue, from 12:30 to 4:30. And my goal is to go and replicate this as many places as I can all over the state or anywhere that'll have me, because we really need to get some really, really specific, well thought out, concrete plans ready to go for how we're going to deal with the next 4 years. Unfortunately, we've been through some of this before, but this is not the same administration it was in 2017. We are going to be under a whole lot more a lot more pressure to make sure that every action we do, everyone needs to be able to go home safely at the end of the night. And so that is what I'm going to be dedicating my time to, at the very least over the next year, probably the next several years, really trying to empower every group and every individual and everybody who is thinking to themselves, what are we going to do? I want to give people the tools to build their own movements, their own actions, and do it in a way that is in no way can ever be scapegoated, or I want to avoid the both sides are bad, or everyone, no one was blameless, all of those kinds of things. We got to get good at this, because it needs to be crystal clear from every angle, in every photo, in every video, that there's nothing but peaceful demonstration happening, because the media will not be fair about it. They will be lazy. And if they can paint it as, well, both sides were equally bad when this clash happened, right, they're going to do that. So I really encourage everyone, if they are able to come to this training, it's going to be really great. If not, please feel free to reach out to me. I'm on Blue Sky. My DMs are open. I'm willing to come and talk and do this training again with any group that wants it. We'll just have to get it on the calendar.
I also love that you just said that you're hoping to have this go throughout the entire state too, that you're just not concentrating on where you are right in Southeast Michigan. You like to replicate this throughout the state.
Yeah. Correct. And awesome. Willing to go to other states too. I mean, right now this is just, you know, sort of, I'm on a one woman crusade here, and yep, I'm going to do what I can with my abilities, but I'm happy to work with anybody and do what I can to get this as many places as possible, because I really believe that this is what we need to do to keep everybody as safe as possible as we fight this upcoming fascist regime.
We need it. I'll make sure to provide the Facebook link wherever people are getting this show as well. Julia Pulver, thanks so much for offering your valuable time. on the show here this week, and I'll make sure to highlight the workshop as much as possible. And thanks for always fighting for the progressive movement here inside the state of Michigan. It was great catching up with you, and please, let's do this again soon.
Absolutely, anytime.
He enjoys watching sporting events from years ago. He can recite most of the 1984 Detroit Tigers lineup. He will go to the mat in saying Michigan has produced some of the greatest music in the past 60 years. But most of all, he enjoys the loyalty of a fine dog while sipping on a tasty Michigan beer. Oh, and he loves talking about politics, if you haven't been able to tell yet. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need more Pat? Visit and subscribe to leftoflansing.com. Now, back to Pat.
Yeah, that was great getting to catch up with Julia Pulver. And like many of the other progressives who are working day and night on trying to blunt the spread of autocracy and fascism across the state, we are lucky to have a battler like Julia Pulver right here in Michigan. Again, I'll link to the Facebook posting for the Wage Peace Workshop that Julia is hosting on March 1st, wherever that you are listening to this podcast. And remember, you can always email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com, and follow me on Blue Sky. Also, follow the show on YouTube, and also subscribe to it. That is very important. And of course, subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening now. That is equally important. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. I needed to spend just a moment here praising progressive Democratic state representative and friend of the show, Lori Pahuski of Livonia, for making a bold announcement and then taking on the weird and fragile MAGA Republicans who criticized her. Representative Pahuski announced during a 50501 protest at the state capitol building last week that she underwent a sterilization procedure. And I just want to note here that these 50501 events are designed to spark immediate protest to President Musk and Dear Leader Trump's illegal activities. Okay, here's how the Telegraph reported on Pahuski's announcement at the rally. And I'm quoting here, "Just under 2 weeks ago, I underwent surgery to ensure that I would never have to navigate a pregnancy in Donald Trump's America," Pahuski told the crowd of hundreds, some of whom held placards comparing Republicans with Nazis. "If you know people who are questioning how serious this is, I'm going to repeat myself. A sitting government official opted for voluntary sterilization because she was uncertain she would be able to access contraception in the future," unquote. So Representative Pahuski also told the Telegraph that she made her decision based on the uncertainty of the Musk-Trump regime and whether or not they would try to ban contraception. Now, it is true that Michigan enshrined abortion rights in the state's constitution a couple of years ago. However, with Musk and Trump in the White House and MAGA Republicans controlling Congress and the Supreme Court, that right in Michigan could vanish just like that if the right-wing majority on the court rules for a national abortion ban. I know many scoff, saying, oh, that would never happen. How many of you thought that Roe v. Wade would be overturned by this right-wing court? But you should also read some of the hate-filled comments by the white Christian nationalists who just cannot stand that a woman made her own healthcare choices. In fact, Representative Pahuski posted on Blue Sky, "The fact that so many conservative men take personal offense to a decision that I made with my husband about my healthcare and future just proves the point that we should not assume that right is secure." Exactly. And that's what I just said as well. Michigan Advance's Andrew Roth talked with Pahuski, and here's a brief section of that story. "In one voicemail left with her office, the caller says that godless people are going to be eliminated and warns Pahuski that she is on notice. Some of the threats have been referred to law enforcement to investigate." Pahuski said that U.S. Representative Rashida Tlaib of Detroit reached out to her after the speech gained traction online, noting that Tlaib was no stranger to viral moments or receiving threats. Now, for some of you out there, some of you liberals who spewed hate towards Congresswoman Tlaib because she refused to stand down while her fellow Palestinians were being slaughtered by that maniac Bibi Netanyahu with American money and guns, there was Rashida Tlaib right there reaching out to support Representative Pahuski because Tlaib stands up for the people and works hard for the people who have the morals and the courage to fight and to do what they feel is right. But also, I have to just say this, that some MAGA Republicans felt compelled to leave death threats on Pahuski's voicemail simply shows how crazy and weird these people really are in their quest to have full domain over a woman's healthcare decisions. And it shows, just like Julia Pulver said, why we cannot afford one bit to capitulate to these guys at all. Not one bit.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to Julia Pulver for being on the show this week. Again, leave your comments or future guest suggestions at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Or if you need a little escapism, talk to me about some Tigers baseball. Pitchers and catchers just reported in Lakeland, Florida this week, which seems kind of strange considering how much snow that we've gotten and are expected to get across the state over the next few days. But when you hear news like that, that's a reminder that springtime and baseball are just around the corner. So you've got that, right? But if you are feeling despair, listen to people like Julia Pulver, who refuse to capitulate, who refuse to give in to despair, and who will keep adding her voice to those who are not able to speak for themselves. And she is someone who will work overtime to ensure that we stop MAGA fascism in its tracks. Until next time, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.